Hello and welcome to Androids and Assets, Emissaries of Prophets.
I'm Steven.
And I'm Marshall. Today we're talking about episode 3 in Deep Space Nine, past prologue. This aired January 10th, 1993. It's episode 3 on Netflix. If you watched this in real time back in 1993, this would have been the second episode? No, fourth. I'm not. Anyway, we're watching them in production order because that's what Netflix does. We're not watching them in airing order because that's just not what Netflix does. So that solves that. Small problem that we had last time. I'm like, what's going on?
Why can't we get these things to line up? Internet. Anyway, we figured it out, and it should be. I don't see it happening again, but if it does, we'll mention it.
Yeah, I think from here on out, production order lined up with actual airing order, so there shouldn't be any changes.
Okay, so I think we're going to try and streamline our plot summaries here a little bit. So I'm just going to give you the quick and dirty. yeah. So it all starts with our favorite Dr. Bashir going around, and he meets up with the last Cardassian on the station, a guy called Garrick. He's the local tailor, and boy, Garrick's a weird dude. He's Bashir's like, are you a spy? He's like, I'm not a spy. Why, if I was a spy, I... And Bashir's like, oh my God, that guy is a spy. So he does what any, you know, weenie mama's boy does. He immediately runs and tells Sisko, I think Garrick's a spy. And everyone's like, oh my God, Bashir, you know nothing. No one's trying to pump you for information. You literally know the least of anyone here. And he's like, should I wear a wire? And they're like, no, that's dumb. You're dumb, Bashir. And this is a really fun way to start it off because then things start happening. The Cardassians are chasing a Bajoran scout vessel into space. Deep Space Nine rescues the Bajoran off a ship. The ship gets blown up. And then we basically find out that the guy they saved was the Cardassians' Osama bin Laden.
that's pretty apt.
Yeah, he's a terrorist. His name.
Atana Los.
Atana Los. I'm so bad with Bajoran names. I guess. So Atana Los is rescued. Turns out Atana Los is a big time terrorist. He fights with this group called the Khonma, which are like hardcore Bajoran nationalists. They are dissatisfied with the settlement of the Cardassian withdrawal. They want total autonomy. They don't want the Federation there. They continue to attack the Cardassians for some reason. It's not clear. They're considered a criminal organization by the provisional Bajoran government. And Kira used to have, solidarity with the Khonma, although she was never a Khonma soldier herself. I think her rebel group worked with the Khonma any periods during the war. Anyway, all this to say, it's weird. Sisko ends up giving, he's like weighing whether or not he hands over, hands Tana, whether he hands Tana back over the Cardassians or not. The Cardassians really want him, understandably. I guess he blew up a school bus of children. I don't know. I'm making things up here, but something commensurately horrible. But Kira wants to save him. She sets up this whole extradition deal. He promises to bring a bunch of Khonma commanders onto the provisional government side, get them to defect back, reconcile them with the government, and, get them all on board with the provisional government nation-building process. And this is very important to Kira. Sisko's like, whatever, I don't care, not my problem. Kira's like, you're dumb. She goes above Sisko's head to his boss. I'm taking way too long with this. That's kind of a necessary detail. But anyway, you find out that basically Tana, you find out that Tana, of course, says he's, wants to come in from the cold, but he's actually is planning to blow up the wormhole. So he sets up a deal with these Klingon babes to get a bomb to blow up the wormhole. But Kira, and Odo were together. They foil his plot, and he's then sent to a very nebulous detention status. Odo slaps the cuffs on him, and it's like, there is no mention of how this is resolved further on, because there is a huge, because clearly, like, I think three jurisdictions now want him. But that's never resolved.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Like, as the Federation administrators, do they say, well, we've got jurisdiction here and lock him up? But he was committing crimes against Bajor in Bajor in space. So maybe they have jurisdiction.
But the Cardassians also super want him because, again, he's basically their Osama bin Laden. So
yeah. So, I mean, what sort of extradition treaties do they have, right?
Yeah. What does that mean? And also, like, I think it's really funny how, like, you know, here you have American mainstream television from the 90s that depicts the violation of sovereignty by an armed force to kill an enemy of the state as a bad thing. Given the fact that 20 years later, they would, almost 20 years later, exactly, they would be doing that exact thing and so fucking pleased with themselves.
I think that's probably the most famous example we have 20 years later.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty confident it happened more than that.
Oh, it certainly did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was happening at the time, I think.
But yeah. We just didn't have the names.
That's fair. I mean, I think it was happening with Osama bin Laden, because when does he blow? 92 is the SS Cole, right? USS Cole? Okay, not sure. Irrelevant. Anyway, so that's basically the episode. Did I do all right? Is there anything I missed?
No. I mean, I would point out that the Klingon babes were Lursa and Bator, the Duras sisters.
Right, who are actually really important continuing figures.
Oh, yeah.
In both TNG and...
And DS9. And DS9. I think they show up in DS9 again.
Yeah.
At least they're big in TNG. They show up several times as, like, direct aggressors to...
Anyway, I think they're
aggressors. What's the word? Opposite of protagonist. Antagonist. They show up as direct antagonists to Worf.
Right.
Cool. Because they're like dishonorable, but they're Klingon.
Yeah.
And he's super honorable, but only kind of Klingon. And so it's like.
They're his foils.
Dun, 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 dun.
We'll get the sound cue for that. Anyway, what's really important, though, is that Garak ends up using Bashir as his contact and ends up blowing the lid off the whole conspiracy. And so Bashir is like putty in Garak's hand and he can use him like a tool. And then Sisko's like, well, okay, all right. But he feels really important about the whole thing. I think they're going to set this up, that this is going to be a dynamic moving forward, that Garak uses Bashir as his conduit with the Federation. And that's a double-edged sword because Bashir is super fucking dumb.
Well, I mean, yeah, he is super dumb, but that's sort of why it's perfect, is there's complete plausible deniability on both parts, right? Sisko can be like, I don't know, Bashir came and said, can I buy a suit at 10 o'clock at night? And I said, yeah, do what you want. You're an adult. And Garak was like, yeah, he was in my shop buying a suit. I don't know. I sell clothes. He came and bought some.
And Bashir's like, I don't know what's going on, but this is awesome.
I don't know, guys. I was in a suit shop after my bedtime.
I feel like I'm in a Hardy Boys novel. I don't know why I'm doing C-3PO. Goodness gracious me.
Well, I mean, C-3PO and Bashir have some similar...
Basically the same character tics, archetype.
Vocal tics.
Yeah, so what are the, I guess, the themes of this episode?
I think there's something after you have these transitions of power, but you've had, you know, multiple groups that are disparate groups working towards sort of one common-ish goal. How do you then resolve those people into sort of one singular national identity?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because obviously the Khon Ma are like, they're not satisfied yet, but most of the Bajorans are satisfied. So how do you resolve that, right?
It's interesting to me that the Khon Ma continue to attack the Cardassians and haven't just turned their guns on the Federation.
Yeah,
which seems to me to be the sensible program.
Well, you'd think so.
Yeah. Weird.
Attacking Cardassians aren't they're like what more do you want? We're out of your system. We've left you alone.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We are not your oppressors anymore.
Yeah. Like I mean you could see like again, we're trying to figure out like what is a real life example of this, like something where like a colonial power withdraws and then a militia continues attacking the colonizing nation. And we could not think of really a single one. The only one that we kind of came close was like the IRA.
Yeah.
But even then, like North Ireland remained occupied. So they still had struggle there, you know.
But I do think there have been some sort of in Africa, and that's what has led to some of the civil wars in African nations is like, well, we were all fighting against oppressors, and then one group became, so it was sort of like the accepted transitory government, and other groups didn't accept them and continue to fight against a transitory government.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, there's...
But
yeah.
But never against like, oh, we're still going to go and blow stuff up in England or Italy or France or Portugal
Belgium.
Or Germany or...
List every European country. Yeah, exactly. So it becomes like, it's very strange, I think. And of course, it's a television show, so it doesn't have to be rooted in reality. But I think for us, we're always trying to find those connections. What is this trying to signal to us about the world that it's situated in?
Yeah, and I think it is sort of saying, you know, there are groups that the Americans are fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
And or governments that they were hostile to, mm-hmm. but have since become friendly to, and they might still be there fighting or like supporting them in some ways and saying, well, oh, we're here as like to help the transfer of power and to provide stability and provide support. And yes, we're still killing whatever Iraqis or Pakistanis or Afghanis or something like that. But we're here to, you know, shore up the legitimate government.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's something you said that it might, to some extent, actually kind of is Al-Qaeda. Because Al-Qaeda is actually operative during the 90s.
That's true.
So there is kind of something, and this kind of notion of like then stateless, like people aren't representing a nationalist struggle,
right.
but who are representing a broader like ethno, you know, in Al-Qaeda's case, like Salafi, you know, religious agenda. So, you know, I think that maybe then that's...
And it sort of pushes this idea that these rebel groups stopped fighting for a cause and sort of started fighting for fighting's sake. Like they forgot why they were at war and they just kept the war going because
they don't really
know what else to do anymore.
Sure. And I think when you think about like the transition from like Mujahideen to full-blown Al-Qaeda, like that makes sense. But no one understood that at the time, I think. Really,
no.
The average American had no concept of what, like they knew Al-Qaeda was out there, they knew it was bad, but they...
I think what you're trying to say here then is that we should be using DS9 as an allegory or an example when we're talking to Americans about Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, Al-Qaeda is like the Cone Ma in DS9.
Oh!
And then everyone's going to light bulb.
No, because
right
I mean the Cone Ma aren't really like Al-Qaeda, but I think they're, you know, there's like this. I think the Cone Ma represent what Al-Qaeda and groups like it were thought to be like at one time.
Oh, like isn't just that, complete radicals that were fighting.
Yeah. And that was still enmeshed with some sense of national identity because the IRA were a very recent living memory in 1993. I mean, kind of, it had simmered down, I think, by 93, but that was very, had a huge impression on the Anglo consciousness.
The other, I mean, there's always that there's also the question around sort of like the purity of goals.
Yeah.
Like intent and like, is your heart actually in the right place?
Mm-hmm. That's big for the Federation.
Well, and also for Tana, right? Because he's saying Kira is a traitor because she is supporting the Bajoran provisional government and yeah. not fighting against the Federation. He's like, you are a traitor because these people are as bad as the Cardassians.
Mm-hmm.
We want Bajor for Bajorans and no one else, no outside influence. Maybe no outside contact. I'm not mm-hmm. even sure.
Yeah.
So there's this purity that like Bajor is ostensibly free and is self-governed, but that's not enough for these people. They're saying, well, yeah, but you still have
I think there's a relationship
with the Federation.
There's an argument to be made that Bajor is not as free, or there is certainly a fear that Bajor, any freedom Bajor has attained, could be rolled back.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm saying, like, ostensibly. Ostensibly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
The Federation doesn't have a seat on the provisional government, but certainly if the Federation came and said, hey, look, Bajor, we think you probably shouldn't let these particular ships through the wormhole, Bajor would probably... Get a hint.
Acquiesce to their request.
Like, oh, okay, yeah, no, those ships won't go through the wormhole.
You know, or Federation NGOs are paying for smear campaigns against progressive candidates in their elections.
absolutely.
I mean, again, this is our whole reading is Federation as America,
a
little bit. So that's kind of how we're seeing this. So
if we think about
America and how it's operated in like third world countries or post-colonial air quotes there countries, then we kind of see that they talk this very egalitarian game, but it doesn't really fall through in policy and in practice.
The other thing that I was kind of thinking about, and this is probably what the writers, really had in mind when they were writing, is sort of like, how does your past shape you, and how do you reconcile things that you used to do with the things that you do now?
Right, because the title you were telling me is that's a literary reference. The title.
Yes.
Past prologue.
I mean, I think it's a reference probably to Shakespeare's The Past as Prologue, right, from The Tempest. That everything that has passed has brought us to where we are now.
Right.
And so you've got Kira, who, used to be part of this
militant.
Yeah, she remembers fighting, and she still has, PTSD that she's suffering from because of the things that she's done. And at the time she was doing them, it was very easy to justify saying, I'm doing this for Bajor against oppressive people.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has someone from her past come and say, look, we're still oppressed. Yeah, we need to fight.
We can keep the band together. We can keep living in a van. We can keep living in a van and blowing up bridges together, just like the good old days.
And she's very torn. For a while she's thinking, maybe I have... traded in my values because I, the killing is hard and I just wanted to stop killing. So I downgraded what I was willing to accept. And Tana is just a better person than me that he wasn't willing to compromise. So this sort of like idea that,
mm-hmm.
how do you say what I used to do is still what I'm doing now, or is it the same? And when do you say, okay, yeah, I've broken and I'm not part of this, like,
mm-hmm.
revolutionary force anymore. Now I'm part of the Thatcherites. Because those are your two options.
The Trotskyite to neocon pipeline. Yeah.
So some of the other sort of side things that are going on, because I think that's kind of the big picture
mm-hmm.
there that we see, right?
Yeah.
Is the revolutionary struggle and when is it over, or is it ever over? And if you were part of that struggle, when are you a traitor to that struggle for siding with a, transitional government?
That is backed by a foreign power.
Yeah. Is there a victory? And when are, what goals are right to say, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah, because you can't just be killing for everything all the time. Like, you can't just be if you're just like ruling through taking what you want at gunpoint, you're not a government. You're just bandits.
Yeah.
So
there are some things that we learn though, or that are maybe like driven home for us. Cardassians are bad people. They're just bad. They torture people.
Yeah. Yeah, when was the last time you saw characters on screen like seeing torture as being conducted by the bad guy and then condemning it on screen?
So they show the Cardassians and the torture. I mean, they don't show the torture, they show the after effects. Both Kira and Tana are like, oh yeah, this is what the Cardassians do. They have these special tortures that, you know,
keep you alive. Well, they eviscerate you.
Well, that's
you.
What torture is. Otherwise, it's just execution.
I know, but it's well, they like cut you up and take out your organs or whatever horrible shit they do.
Sure, I know, but that's kind of what torture is, right? Yeah. As soon as it steps the line from being like, if they were like, oh yeah, the torture just kills people, you're like, well, that's just
execution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, O'Brien also mentions it, where he's talking to Sisko and makes a specific note of like, Commander, you know, like, have you ever fought against Cardassians? And no, I haven't. Well, if you had, you would know what they do to their enemies, and you would never turn anyone over to them ever. Yeah.
They're not in the safe country accord.
Yeah.
But somehow the United States is.
I mean, anyway, that's a problem. Yeah. And we should end the third safe country agreement.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of an interesting thing, that it's just like, remember how bad the Cardassians are. They always do bad things. Like any bad thing mm-hmm. that anybody ever does, they're like, the Cardassians do that.
Yeah.
They are bad people.
But then Sisko
talking about war.
Yeah.
And Sisko has this terrible, you know, because one of the
Gulls.
From the Cardassians is in Sisko's office, and he's like, you need to hand him over. He's Konma, and not even the provisional government will protect him. Give him back now. You know, he's committed terrible atrocities. And Sisko replies and is like, well, you know, in war, both sides commit atrocities. You're like,
what?
No, what? That is not a necessity in war.
No. That is crazy.
Well, you know, sometimes the Federation just blows up an entire colony on a moon just to make a point. But they were in war, so that's completely... No, Sisko. No. I think this is also foreshadowing sort of into, like, mm-hmm. that Sisko doesn't really have any morals. He just has goals.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's true. Well, another thing, I mean, one of the things that was huge... in the 1990s, I even remember this. I remember this talking point because basically you were having the U.S. was going to all these places and doing really terrible stuff. And there was this like media line. I first heard like quite a few years after 1993, but in reference to Kosovo, like it was like, well, it's a war, atrocities on all sides. Everyone committed atrocities. That's just what it was. You know, it's like, no. No, there were people who were committing atrocities. There were some people that weren't committing atrocities. And then certainly the UN mission should in no way have been committing atrocities. If you go there to help and wind up committing atrocities, you should have stayed home.
Well, yeah.
Well, which is, I think, what they should have done. But anyway, no matter. It doesn't matter. But.
There's it's sort of a bit of a throwaway-ish, but again, it fleshes out some character points. Mm-hmm. Tana is on the space station, and Odo is giving a report to Sisko of like, yep, he's here, he's just hanging out. And Sisko's like, damn it, I don't like him just being around. And Odo says, you know...
You can just lock him up for you.
Just go lock him up.
Indefinite detention. Patriot Act.
And Sisko, you know, probably rightly, is like, whoa, he hasn't committed any crimes. You can't just lock him up for that, like, for no reason. And Odo's like, maybe the Cardassians were oppressive, but life was sure simple under them.
They got things done.
Wow.
I miss my old boss.
Admiration for the Cardassian totalitarianism of like, yeah, if I wanted to lock somebody up, I locked them up. And you know who complained about it? Nobody.
Yeah.
Maybe the guy who got locked up.
Yeah, so Odo again, quite a
he's a budding dictator.
Yeah,
like never give him authority.
Never make him more than like the neighborhood beat cop, and that is probably way too much.
Yeah,
actually, we know that's way too much because he is very abusive of that power.
Incredibly abusive.
And we are barely starting this.
Yeah. I also really like sort of Kira growing into and accepting her role.
Yeah.
And she says at some point she's talking to Tana and says she's not a politician. She's just here, you know, somebody's got to do the work of liaising between the Federation and the provisional government.
Yeah.
And
she's established with like complex, like multi-party, legal pardon for like,
yeah. Okay, don't worry. I've gotten all three committee members on board. This hearing is just going to be, you know, completely for show. We've already guaranteed that you have amnesty, and the two friends you bring with you have amnesty. Yeah. And you know, all I had to do was broker some power agreements between. Wow. So I mean, one, it's kind of dark in that it's decided that like backroom politics are all that's necessary to get things done. Mm-hmm. Like the hearing is all for show.
Backroom deals brokered by the military.
Yeah.
Which is hardly a transparent civilian government.
But then you do have Kira sort of transitioning from her old solution might have been, I'll just kill a few folks and that'll clear the way to, okay, I'll grease some palms.
Yeah,
and that'll clear the way. So she's definitely growing into her role as like a political military attaché.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of showing how things are getting done, and
I think accurate. Any high ranking like military.
Yeah, and at a certain point, you just have to stop going to war over everything. You actually have to start becoming a state. And having, you know, doing things through policy and negotiation and, you know, actually just practically addressing the environment around you. So,
yeah.
Aw, our Bajor's growing up.
So fast.
Yeah, so fast.
So fast.
One day they're throwing Molotov cocktails to get more credit sticks and then...
credit sticks.
They've opened a central bank... Brings tears to the eyes.
Central bank. So they can issue what? Fiat currency?
We all know it's worthless. Gold pressed platinum. That has real value. We'll get into that. That's a significant thing in this this series, actually.
So where do you stand? Bajor for Bajorans?
Well, I think it's complicated. I think obviously, like, you know, clearly the Kanma, like they're with their weird sort of Bajoran ethno state are maybe not good people. But I think there's this issue.
So you're
that,
for the Federation then.
Well, we'll see. We'll see where we stand.
I mean, come on, Kira, it's one side or the other.
I mean, Kira's interesting because she understands the danger of having the Federation there. And I think that's what I think that there's something I would like to see more in Bajoran politics, i.e. right now, I think if more people had that suspicion, I think rather than racing to embrace grand narratives in other directions, I think it'd be better poised. But, you know, I think this is kind of an example of how the Federation / America kind of works, right? It really works those underlying indigenous tensions against those groups, and it is extremely just devastatingly effective at it. But I mean, it's interesting now because now they're in a place where maybe, you know, that's being done back to them, and they do not like it. Ooh, they hates it.
Well, some of them do.
some of them do, yeah. So anyway, it's interesting times. The time in which Deep Space Nine is set. Interesting times for Bajor.
In the 23rd century.
In the 23rd century.
Or whatever it is. I don't know, 24th, 23rd, something like that. Sure. It's a long time away.
I think that's... more or less everything I had.
That's everything for me.
Okay.
So this is Deep Space Nine, Episode 3, Past Prologue. We are androids and assets, doing emissaries of prophets. You can find our show on Twitter at Asset Droid. You can find me, Marshall, on Twitter at Econoboid.
And I'm Steve Droids, at Steve Droids. With, no, at. And then, if then statement, Steve Droids. Just put that in there.
Someday Steven will figure out how social media works.
I do not know what I'm doing.
I mean, to be fair, neither of us do.
No.
But at least I know what I'm called.
I'm so old.
You can also find us on Instagram at AssetDroid, or feel free to email us. I'm Marshall at androidsandassets.ca.
I'm Steve at androidsandassets.ca. And our website is androidsandassets.ca.
Our website is androidsandassets.ca. If you would like to help us out, you know, go on to iTunes, subscribe and listen, and maybe share this show with a friend of yours. You might be lining up for, you know, the newest comic books. And just turn to the people around you and say, hey, have you heard of Androids and Assets? Mm-hmm. You should listen to their show. And then just play it on your phone as loud as you can.
Yeah.
While you're standing in line, because it's a pretty captive audience.
That's right. It's like Reddit for people.
It's like Reddit for people.